is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hour. I'm Elise Blank. Thanks for joining us today. Sitting in for Clark today and tomorrow. Hope that we can get out some great information for you. Our number 404-872-0750. Online all the time. My website is thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter when you're on thinklink.com, or you can hang out with me online. Right now I've been tweeting. My Twitter handle is at, the at sign, Glink, G-L-I-N-K. And I just tweeted that today I'm coming on the show to answer your tax and real estate questions. And you can line up now. Oh, people already are. 404-872-0750. But because it's the end of the year, and very excited to join you as we count our way down to 2012, I thought I would get a little bit of help here. Now, something that we do regularly on the Elise Glink Show, three or four times a year, is we have some friends of mine, Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, who are enrolled agents. And enrolled agents are tax practitioners who are licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS, and their website is the number 4GAEA.org. They're members of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. On ThinkLink and at the Elise Glink Show and at our different events that we've had, we've invited Bill and Mary and some of the other enrolled agents from Georgia to join us on air to answer your tax questions. And because we are winding our way down to the end of another year together, I think I've been filling in for Clark now. This is the end of maybe year 14. Ooh, we're going to hit a milestone year in 2012. I asked Bill and Mary to join me online here for the first time to answer your questions and to talk about some things that you can do over the next few days before we end the year that are going to make, that will make it so much easier for you when you're putting together your taxes come either March 15th if you're an employer, or April 15th if you're just sort of an employee or a citizen, you know, whatever. And so we wanted to get a chance to have that conversation. And then the second hour of the show, we're going to talk about the economy and what's going on. There's been, given that this is the week it's been, there's been a relatively large amount of business news going on. There's a lot going on in Europe. So next hour, we're going to sit and talk about all of that and answer more of your real estate questions and comments on the economy. So let me get the number out, 404-872-0750. Bill Nemeth, Mary Brody, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's very nice to have you guys here. So let's kick this off with a couple of things that somebody might want to do before the end of the year. I know that we talk often about putting away money for your retirement, and that helps you now because it reduces your income that you'll be paying taxes on in April, but it also helps you for the future. So what are some options that people have?
Well, the 401k and your 403b contributions, if you could max those out before the end of the year, might be kind of difficult unless you own your own business and then you have complete control over what you put in. Simple plans should also be maxed out. And don't forget the HSA contribution. That's the health savings account. That should be maxed out too.
Yeah, that's actually a really big one because that you need to put money away, but don't you also need to spend it this year? Or is that the cafeteria plan?
That's the cafeteria plan. Thankfully, with the HSA, you can just keep dropping money into it year after year after year. Anything that comes back out as payment of expenses is all it's not tax-free. It's all tax-free. And but you can, it's a basic savings account.
And then the cafeteria plan, that's use it or lose it by the end of the year, right?
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
So what about other kinds of ways that you might be able to put things away? What about a Roth IRA?
Certainly a Roth IRA is always a good idea. However, it doesn't have any impact on your taxes. You're not going to reduce your taxable income, but you are putting money away, and it stays and grows tax-free. And it has the benefit that you don't ever have to take it out. You can will that to your heirs without any tax consequences.
That's really actually one of the best benefits of a Roth IRA, I think, is that, I mean, you get this, it's $5,000 if you're 50 or under that you get to put away, an extra $1,000 if you're above that. And then the pass-down provisions are terrific.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. What else might somebody be able to do? What about a regular IRA?
Certainly, a regular IRA, you have until April 17th-ish of the coming year to contribute to a traditional IRA. If you choose to get an extension, then you can then extend that until October 17th. And that is going to do two things. One, it puts the money away so it grows tax-free. And number two, it is going to improve your tax situation. You will have to pay less tax today.
And what's the limit on that this year?
It has not changed for a number of years. It's $5,000 if you're 50 or below. If you're over 50, it's $1,000 more or $6,000.
Great. So there's some different ways that people can do things. Do you need to open up the Roth IRA by the end of the year?
No, you can wait until April 15th to open either a Roth or a traditional IRA. And some people get caught. Their income is too high. They've made a traditional IRA contribution, and now it's not deductible or not. You can't make it at all. So they switch it to a Roth.
Okay. But there are some things that you do need to do before the end of the year. So one thing that I always talk about is making an extra mortgage payment, getting your January payment with the interest in. Why would somebody want to do that?
Because it should increase the amount of interest deduction that you would receive for the year. It also pays down the principal, which is a great thing. But another tax-saving thing you can do before the end of the year, certainly, is a charitable contribution. And a nice way to handle that is with a credit card, because you can make that online payment to your local charity or your favorite charity, and as long as it's charged to your credit card by December the 31st, you still get the deduction, even if you don't actually pay it until January.
That's actually really, really nice. What are the who gets to deduct? And I think there's always some confusion around this. What is the standard deduction, and who benefits above that?
Standard deduction went up a little bit. This year, married filing jointly is $11,600. Single people are half that, or $5,800. And the people that will benefit from the standard deductions are the people that are newly entering the workforce. They're out on their own. They don't own a home. They can't do a Schedule A with itemized deductions. So those are very handsome numbers. Also, at the other end of the spectrum, if you talk about the empty nesters who have paid down their houses, they may not be able to itemize unless they're very charitable or live in an area that has exceptionally high property taxes, because it's hard to get over these limits of $11,600.
On the other hand, it's not as though the seniors are going to have a whole lot of interest income this year.
That is true.
Again, for like the fourth or fifth year in a row. I keep hearing about this. There was a great comment online when they announced that inflation had stayed really modest, and they said, yeah, okay, inflation's like 2%, but we're only getting about 0.5% on our money. You know, we're getting killed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically. All right, well, let's go to the phones. We are talking with Bill Nemeth. He's president of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, number 4GAEA.org, and Mary Brody, also an enrolled agent. Both of them have loads of experience doing taxes. Let's see if they can help you out. Lee joins us on the line from Smyrna. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Why can't I hear Lee?
I don't know.
Oh, now I can hear Lee. Perfect.
Okay.
How are you? Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year to you, ma'am.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
We'll be 70 and a half in 2012, and as I understand it, I'm required to start taking deductions from a 401k.
Yes.
My question is, how much do I have to take, and what can I do? I don't need the money.
Are you still working?
No.
Okay, so you're retired. So have you transferred your 401k to an IRA?
No.
Or you just left it in the 401k?
Yes.
So you want to know how much you have to take and anything
yes.
else?
I'm sorry?
Anything else or just how much you have to take?
Well, I might have when you tell me, I might ask another question.
All right, well, let's get to the first one. Bill and Mary?
Believe it or not, the IRS has made this rather complex. The first question, are you currently married?
Yes.
Is your wife 10 years or more younger than you are?
No, sir.
Okay. So that got us into the right table. Isn't this wonderful? It turns out the first year is, well, every year is based on your life expectancy. If you do the math, you're going to have to pull out 3.65% of the total value of your 401k at the end of 2011. And so
2011 or 2012? He turned 70 and a half next year.
You would count it as of
the end of 2011. Okay.
And it's always the year before, the December 31st, the year before. Now, because he turned 70 and a half in 2012, he actually does not have to make that distribution to himself until April 15th of 2013. But that just means that he's delayed it, because in 2013, you'd end up taking the one for 2012 and the one for 2013.
All right, Lee, how's that for a complicated answer?
Well, since I couldn't hear you, it was great.
Excellent. I wonder why you can't hear us.
I don't know. I can barely hear you.
You can barely
probably
hear me.
Because I'm nearly 70.
You know, I got to tell you, Bill's got a few years on you, I think.
I hope so.
All right, well, let's see if we can just, you know, I'll sort of summarize again for you, and maybe you'll be able to hear a little better. We'll have our fabulous engineer, Alan, boost you up a little bit. If you are married but your wife is not more than 10 years younger than you, you will have to withdraw 3.65% of the total value of your 401k at the end of 2011, but you don't have to do it until 2012. And I think, if I understood correctly, that you do have an option of waiting until April of 2013, but you're going to then have to take out two distributions in 2012 and 2013. So, Lee, beyond that, you probably want to talk to your tax preparer and figure out what you can do to maybe offset or do something else with the money that you're taking out and don't need to live, which is a nice place to be. 18 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can get another quick call in. Michael joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Michael. What's your question?
Hi. Good afternoon. I have successfully modified my first and second mortgages, which are through the same company.
Mm-hmm.
And my third mortgage provider, I had a line of credit that I had used. I was going to negotiate with them because I had the goal of staying in my home, and they offered me the option to write off the amount of $76,000, not to pay that back and to forgive that debt.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, what are my tax responsibilities if I end up taking their offer? And is that considered income, or do I have to pay tax on that for 2012?
Is this your primary residence we're talking about?
It is.
Okay, and you still live there?
I do, and I'm in good standing with my first and second lines of credit, or my first mortgage and second.
Well, we might actually have a little delayed Christmas present for you. Bill, Mary, who wants to take this one?
I'll try to address it. The bottom line is, from 2007 to 2012, the tax laws are such that if you're in your primary residence and you have the situation you have where you've had a cancellation of debt, typically, that was taxable income, or phantom income, as people refer to it. During that time frame, if it's on your principal home, that amount of money is not taxable to you for that span from 2007 to 2012. So that's where Elise gets the delayed Christmas present.
Wow, that's great news. But I was very surprised that they offered it, and they didn't even. I was going to modify and get my interest rate down and try to, you know, resolve that, but they wanted to settle, and so they forgave it. And that's, I think, what I'll plan on doing.
Well, you should definitely do that, but a couple of things to keep in mind. So if they're going to forgive it, you want truly something in writing that says, we're forgiving this and we're not going to resell it to a collector who's going to then come after you. Right? So we want a true, all is forgiven, nobody's ever coming after you, this is the end, finito, done. Just make sure.
My attorney has looked at it, and it's legitimate, and everything's correct. I just didn't know the tax implications.
Yeah, I would say to you that one reason that they may be so eager to do this is that they're actually getting a decent-sized payout. You don't owe that much, $7,600. They're getting
$76,000.
Oh, $76,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's a lot more. They're not getting that much. But they must have another reason for getting this off the books. So lucky you.
Yeah.
Lucky you, because they're not getting that much money from the government for that.
Right.
And take it and run for the hills. And I'm so, so glad that you have an attorney who is looking at this paperwork, because my husband Sam, who's a real estate attorney, and I have started to get a lot of emails from people who were not reading their paperwork carefully, and they thought that these loans had been forgiven, and yet now they're coming back with collectors. We're talking tax this hour. I'm so glad you guys could join us today. I'm Elise Glink, sitting here with Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, enrolled agents who are answering your questions at 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Elise Lane, sitting in for Clark today. 404-872-0750. We're answering your tax questions. My tax helpers, or I should say my tax elves, are Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, who sit in with me often on the Elise Lane Show on Sunday mornings, and we brought them here so that you could get some of the benefit of their wisdom just before the end of the year. They're both enrolled agents, licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. The website is 4GAEA.org, the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Albert joins us on the line. Hi, Albert.
Yeah.
Albert, welcome to the Clark Howard Show. What's your tax question?
Thank you, ma'am. Are you ready for my question?
I am.
I sold a property in Germany, and I made $75,000. Do I need to pay tax when I bring the money over, or do I have to pay tax before I bring it over?
Okay. Bill and Mary, you sell property abroad, in this case Germany. He made $75,000. Albert, are you a U.S. citizen?
Yes.
And do you live in the U.S.?
Yes.
And you just, is this property that you purchased or you were inherited, you were given?
No, I went to partnership with one of my friends over there, and we made the money.
Okay. Bill and Mary, what advice do you have for Albert?
Okay. Typically, U.S. law says that U.S. citizens living in the United States will report their worldwide income. So certainly that would be a taxable gain. It sounds like it's going to be a long-term gain because it was investment property. So he may end up either paying 0% tax or 15% maximum capital gains tax in the year he sold it.
Which is nice. So, Albert, you probably want to go talk to your tax professional. It sounds like you might get a little late Christmas present as well. 28 minutes past the hour. We are talking tax on the Clark Howard Show. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Everybody, to the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today and tomorrow, and I have some guests with me today. I have Mary Brody and Bill Nemeth. They are enrolled agents, licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. They sit with me a few times a year on the Think Link Show on Sunday, and I invited them to come on today to help answer your tax questions before the end of the year. Now, Bill sent me, he always keeps me up to date on all the really cool things going on, and so the other day, he sent me recession tax law changes, which I'm going to have put up on ThinkLink as a blog post for today's show notes. But I wanted to just, before we jump into your calls, run down quickly all of the tax law changes that we've seen, the big ones, since 2008 when the recession started. And I'm going to go with, he sent them to me the most current first. The 2012 payroll tax holiday, now through February of 2012, you pay 2% less in Social Security tax. That was on the heels of the 2011 payroll tax holiday, same thing. 2009 and 2010, we had the Making Work Pay credit, Schedule M, $400 or $800. In 2010, you had hiring incentives to restore employment, the HIRE Act. 2008 to 2012, the American Opportunity Credit, up to $2,500 per student, partially refundable. 2009 saw the Cash for Clunkers program, the first-time homebuyer credit, the $8,000 refundable credit, the first-time homebuyer credit that was the $7,500 0% loan. And then in 2008, we saw, that was the first-time homebuyer credit loan, and we also had the bonus depreciation for the equipment that was purchased new, the expanded Section 179 depreciation. We saw the suspend required minimum distributions on retirement plans. That was in 2009. You didn't have to do that. 2008 had the five-year, what's NOL, Bill?
It's a business thing.
Oh, the business thing, right. Carry back. The 2008, I can't believe all of these tax laws. We were so busy back then talking about all this stuff. This year seemed like, you know, nothing. Like, you know, hardly anything this year we had one. And I'm not even done with your list, but 2008 child tax credit threshold was reduced from $12,050 to $8,500, and then we had the child tax credit threshold reduced to $3,000. We had the earned income expanded earned income credit for up to three kids from 2009 to 2012. Then we had the now extended through 2012, the foreclosure of taxpayers' primary residence, taxability of forgiven debt suspended. And finally, the stimulus payment. Does anybody even remember this? 2008? Sent out to taxpayers who filed 2007 returns. It was $300 to $2,400, depending on the income and the number of dependents. I think I got nothing. But anyway, more for everybody else. So that is good. And you guys have done this a long, long time. Do you ever remember a five-year period where so much significant tax legislation was passed?
Never. Never. We still have people wandering in asking about when am I going to get my check over the summer? And that relates, you know, 5 years ago. They're still remembering this.
I guess it was notable. I'm not sure it worked all that well, but, you know, it certainly made a lot of work for everybody else. All right, let's see if we can get a couple of questions in here. Andrea joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Andrea. What's your tax question?
Yes, I have a question about transferring money from abroad. I have a savings account at home back in my home country, and I transferred some money over this year. How do I declare that, and where do I put it on my income tax statement?
Well, bottom line, if it was money that you earned in a foreign country and have already paid tax on it there before you were in the United States, and all you're doing is transferring it, there's really no tax implication of
that.
Right,
but I probably have to mention it somewhere, right?
No, there's no place on a tax form or tax return for a transfer of money that's already had tax paid on it. I don't want to,
okay,
you know, misguide you and
no,
say...
No, that's correct.
But
I couldn't find any, that's why I called you.
Right, well, there is a form. It's called an FBAR. It's an acronym, obviously, and it's for people who have foreign accounts, such as savings accounts, checking accounts, retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
These are all supposed to be reported every single year to the IRS on this FBAR form. And, you know, seek out
Frank
Baby,
uh-huh,
Apple, Rita, I don't know. I'm sure that's all wrong according to the airline association, but they have their own thing.
We're not going to ask them.
It's really a foreign bank account report.
There you go.
FBAR.
It's not easy to find in the system. You don't get it with your 1040 package, but if you have at least $10,000 of money, $10,000 of U.S. money equivalent sitting in a foreign account, and you're in the United States and you're filing a tax return in the United States, you absolutely need to be filing this form. And there are now severe penalties for not getting that form filed on time.
I'm glad I called.
So this form is really just to let them know that you have accounts that are of more than $10,000 abroad. Or is it a total of $10,000?
It's per account.
Okay.
Okay.
If you have five accounts, you file five of these.
Well, can all be listed on the same form.
You file it with your tax return, or you just file it at the end of the year?
It's an independent tax filing. It's an independent form.
All right.
It's due in June of 2012, and it's information only. You will not pay any tax with that information return. You're just telling the IRS where your dollars are.
Okay. Sounds great.
Perfect. Andrea, thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. 42 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glang, 404-872-0750. Kevin joins us on the line from Loganville. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your tax question?
I'm a college student, so I don't really have too much expertise. I'm helping a friend of mine start a nonprofit, and she just got her 501c3 a month ago. But when we got the information, they backdated the information to the begin time of the nonprofit to 2009. And unfortunately, she didn't really keep good records from then until now, and I'm trying to help her with that. But there's no real evidence of any money being moved anywhere So, you know, well, I'm just worried about, like, the tax implications for that. Like, if we get audited, is there anything that we can do to kind of have proof that we've been doing works in that time period?
I'd like to address that. Congratulations on getting the 501c3 status.
Thank you very much.
A question. How much money did the charity raise each year? Was it over $25,000?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
You know, and I'm the secretary. I would have to ask her, but I believe it's under that.
Okay. Here's the deal. If it's under $25,000, you actually have a postcard tax return to file for a nonprofit. And the good news is, for a nonprofit, there is no tax liability.
Right.
It's merely a reporting requirement. And so I would advocate that you sit down and go through the 990s for the particular kind of charity you are and file them back to when you guys were deemed to be a charity, which sounds like it's going to be 2009. When you send those in, you'll get a dunning letter from the IRS saying, you're late, you're going to have to pay penalties. It's a first-time offense. You just write them a polite letter stating that because of the circumstances, you were unaware of the filing requirement, and you'd like to have the penalties waived, and life will go on very nicely.
Okay. Well, that's thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Happy New Year. 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with the calls. Tad joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Tad. Happy New Year. What's your tax question? Tad, you with us? Maybe not. Let's try Tiffany. Tiffany, you there?
Yes. Hello?
Hi, Tiffany. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show. What's your tax question?
Yes, I have my mother staying with me. She gets, I guess, disability, and so she started staying with me, I guess, at the, you know, the beginning of the year, and so she's just been helping me out, I guess. But I didn't know if she files taxes to say that, you know, she's been giving me money, or do when I file my taxes, do I have to put that the money that she gave me? Because it came up to about, I guess, $6,000 is how much she's probably giving me for the year.
But she's living with you, right? She's living with you?
Yeah, she's living with me. So I'm taking care of her, and, you know, so.
So you're taking care of her, and she could be considered to be paying rent or just contributing to the household. Bill and Mary, how would this change the tax situation?
Okay, we'll start out with mom's income, which each person is responsible for their own return. If all she's getting is about $6,000 of Social Security, she has no requirement to file a return. If she is allowed to be a dependent on the daughter's return, the daughter then can take benefits for any medical expenses that she's paying for her mom that aren't covered by insurance and so on. So on the face of it, it sounds like she can take mom as a dependent. The money that mom is giving her is not going to affect her tax return at all.
All right, Tiffany, how does that sound?
That sounds really good. I guess I can just go about and just file it, I guess, as her being a dependent man, since I'm helping her.
Well, that's right. Do you normally file your own taxes?
Yes, I do.
And do you use a tax program like TurboTax?
I just go through the IRS website, and they'll just give me like a tax code or like a tax program in big form.
Sounds good.
So I think it's, what is it?
I think what you're talking about is you're going to one of the free file programs through the IRS.gov website, and what you'll find when you go through that is with your mom living with you, your filing status will become, if you're not married, it will be head of household. If you're married, it will just have one more dependent on your return.
Oh, okay. Okay, then. Well, that cleared up a lot.
Good. We're so glad. Thank you so much for your call. And if you have more questions when you're filing in April, Bill and Mary will be back on my show on Sunday mornings.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It is 48 minutes past the hour. Sandy joins us on the line. Hey, Sandy, what's your tax question?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Happy New Year.
Same to you. If you were planning, and I apologize for leading the witness, but I really don't really know the correct way to ask this question. If you're planning ahead for, say, you want to put some money in IRA, 401k, and you're not sure the specific vehicle, then the purpose of it is not only for the tax stuff this year, but in the future, you're looking towards using that money for either buying a house or starting a business? Primarily, number one would be starting a business. What sort of a vehicle could you, tax vehicle could you use to, like, put the money in now, but then later take it out to do that? Or can you?
For a tax, for taking money out of a retirement plan before you're 59 and a half, to start a business, there's really no tax break for that. You'd end up paying tax on the money, and you would end up paying a 10% penalty for taking it out before you hit 59 and a half. Now,
what about buying a house?
Buying a house is different. Bill, is it 401k or?
Yeah, there are some requirements. You can have a withdrawal of up to $10,000 for a first-time home buyer, where that's defined as you haven't had a major home yourself in the last 2 years. But there's some real tricky timing. You've got to pull the money out within 60 days of closing. And all that allows you to do is pull the money out without paying a penalty. It is still taxable income.
Okay.
So, you know, you might be better off just establishing a bank account or a brokerage account and, you know, find some safe stocks that are yielding 5% dividends these days and just let it sit there and grow and pay the tax on it.
There's one possibility, though. What about using a Roth IRA where you can actually withdraw contributions after, what, 5 years?
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, so, Roth would be, if her time frame is that long, that would work out perfectly.
So, Sandy, you could put in $5,000 a year. But you can't take out those contributions, and you can't take out any earned income until you're 59 and a half without paying all kinds of penalties. But you can't touch the contributions for 5 years. So does that work with your time frame?
Well, you know, that all depends on the economy. That's what I'm
waiting for. So there you go. But that is one possibility. And the nice thing there is that if you end up getting other funds to grow the business, then what you've done is fund a really nice retirement for yourself. And we always like that. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, sitting here with Bill and Mary, our enrolled agents tax specialists. We'll be right back to answer more of your questions next on News Talk WSB. 56 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today and tomorrow. Delighted to have you join us. 404-872-0750. We'll be talking about real estate, doing an economic update coming up next. I've got our tax experts, Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody, in with us. We're going to put their links up on today's show notes at thinklink.com. All you have to do is go to the website, hit blog, and it will pop up right there at the top. Not yet, but after the show, we will put them up for you. So if you have further questions, and they'll also monitor any comments that the blog post gets. Belinda joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Belinda. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Same to you.
Thank you. What's your question?
Well, I started selling books on eBay this past summer, and I was told by PayPal that unless I sold $20,000 and 250 sales, that they would not turn anything into the IRS if it were under those, unless both of those requirements were met. So I want to, number one, verify that that is correct. And the second thing is, if I were to get my business license, say today, a small business license, would everything for this year be deductible that I've put into this selling, or would it only be from today till the 31st?
Those are some great questions. I don't think a business license is necessary to have a business. Bill and Mary?
Yeah.
For IRS purposes, is it?
You don't have to have a business license for IRS purposes, but if you're audited, that is one of the things they will ask for to see if you're really treating it like a business. And as far as the expenses go, if you've already been selling on eBay and you have income from that, any expenses that you've had just prior to starting that business or since then up to December 31st are deductible. So if you want to charge up some more expenses, that would be perfectly legitimate to write off against the income.
Do I have to report the income if PayPal doesn't?
Yes, ma'am, you sure do. 1099-K is the new form coming out. PayPal's required to send it out on a certain limit, but that doesn't mean you're not supposed to report it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but everybody has to report all of their income, abroad and locally, to the IRS. Bill Nemeth, Mary Brody, our tax experts from the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We loved having you. We'll talk to you again at ThinkLink probably right after the new year. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to talk about the economy coming up next here on News Talk WSB.
is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Link sitting in for Clark today. All kinds of interesting things going on. 404-872-0750. I want to remind everybody that the 26th annual Job Seeker Call-In Day, today is the last day. If you are looking for a job, Challenger Grain Christmas, which is one of the bigger long-term unemployment global outplacement firms, they have suspended normal business operations for 2 days. This is the 26th year that they've done it, so their professional counselors can provide free job search advice to callers from around the country. They are open until 5 o'clock Central Standard Time today, 6 o'clock local time. Let me give you the number. If you are looking for a job, these guys have great advice. 312-422-5010. 312-422-5010. You can find out about the call-in at the firm's website, challengergray.com. They also have some work up at they have a blog as well, so you may be interested in going there. They have, this is something that I talk about every single year, they're a terrific company, and they really keep an eye on different trends. They understand what industries are getting hot. They understand what employers are looking at. They do lots and lots of job placements. So there are certainly some interesting information. And what they say, you know, which is sort of interesting because you look at the numbers and the unemployment numbers have come down. They look at planned job cut announcements. These are announcements for bigger companies of 50 people or more, and they've tracked them, and the numbers were up slightly in 2011 from 2010, but still below recession levels. Through the end of November, employers announced 564,000 planned job cuts compared to 497,000 over the same period in 2010. How many planned job cuts did we have in 2009? Employers announced 1.2 million job cuts. So that is, you know, more than twice as many as we've had this past year. So job cuts have slowed significantly, but job growth is frustratingly slow, and so many people have given up and gone out that what we're seeing is that, you know, people are just giving up on the job market, and that's very, very difficult. But we are seeing new workers, and we are seeing new jobs. And, you know, we'd like to see more jobs offered. We'd like to see more people hired slowly. But slowly we seem to be getting there. Now, if you feel like, you know, things are really particularly bad in Atlanta, well, the good news is that, and this is just a very, very thin silver lining, that you're not actually imagining things. So the new home price numbers came out. They were released yesterday. And it shows how bad the housing market remains. Now, one thing we haven't really talked about is that the Realtors, the National Association of Realtors, came out, oh, I want to say a few weeks ago, and they announced that they had underreported the depths of the housing depression and the number of existing home sales. They'd overreported it by 14%. 14%. So as bad as the numbers were, or they seemed, they were actually much worse. And in Atlanta, it has actually been one of the places where it has actually been the worst. So we saw that home prices in 20 major metropolitan areas fell 3.4% in October for the year before. It was the 13th consecutive year-to-year decline over the months, which is really terrible. The problem, what they're seeing now, is that workers are really tethered to their houses, right? So in Atlanta, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who isn't really underwater right now, right? Well, if you're underwater, it makes it really hard to leave your house and your job and move somewhere where you might have a better chance at making more money, right? So people tend to relocate from places where jobs are scarce to areas where companies are hiring, but you can't really leave California and Nevada and head to Nebraska and Texas because you can't get rid of your house. And that's really, really difficult. And so for 10.7 million Americans, or 22% of homeowners with a mortgage, they owe more than their houses are worth. And in Atlanta, sort of beyond,
reason, Atlanta is just one of these places, like Arizona and Phoenix, in Phoenix and Arizona and in Nevada, Southern California, where people just can't get rid of these houses. And so they end up feeling really stuck. Same thing in Stroh, Michigan. I know somebody who's been trying to get rid of her Michigan house for 4 years. She can't get rid of it. She doesn't even think she can give it away. And she's not in a position because she works in a place where it really matters what her credit says, and she can't get rid of it now. But people, the Wall Street Journal wrote about this today. There are a lot of people out there who would really like to move on, and they can't. So where are the worst places to live? Many cities with high unemployment rates that also have high rates of negative equity, where your house is worth less than the mortgage, right? Vegas, Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa, Miami, Sacramento, Detroit, Atlanta, San Diego, Chicago, Los Angeles. That's sort of the higher end of unemployment and the higher end of negative equity. And it's, you can just sort of see it there. That is the map of what has gone wrong with this recession. And it's really very difficult when you think about where things are going to get better, where they have to get better. It's going to have to be in these cities, including our very own. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones and see what's going on. Mike joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. What's on your mind today?
I got a settlement from a surgery that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of curious about where I can put it. I don't want to just put it in savings or in my bank account, obviously, but my wife is kind of, she's kind of leery about investing and having it tied up to where we can't access it. Is there any way or any place that we can put the money where it would actually earn anything, but we won't be penalized if we use it or take it if we need it? Because it's basically, it was a settlement for in case I ever have to have anything else done to me in that area.
Okay.
I would be able to pay for it. That way the insurance company isn't liable anymore.
I understand. So let's talk about risk, because there is no place that I know of. I mean, there's a correlation between risk and how much you earn.
Yeah.
Right? So the riskier the investment, the less, the more you earn on it,
exactly,
over time, but the more you can lose. If you want something that's really risk-free, because this is money that you may need for something real, like health care,
yeah,
then you can't really take very much risk with it. So one thing you can think about is putting some of the money into CDs that pay very little right now but may pay more down the line. You can also think about putting the money and in dividing it up into a total stock market fund and total bond market fund, where it would just move with the market, right? And you can divide that up equally so they kind of hopefully balance each other out. The third thing that you can think about doing is finding some dividend stocks that pay a decent sized dividend. But anytime you invest in individual companies, so let's say you spread it out and you found 10 stocks that were each paying 4 or 5% in dividends, you could lose some of your principal because those stock prices float up and down. So I've started with the most safe thing, which is money market, right, where you're earning 0.5%.
Okay.
And then you can walk into CDs, which are slightly, they're really not risky at all. They pay a little bit better. And then you can divide it into some CDs and then also some in the stock market with total investment mutual funds. I would do index mutual funds because they're really, really cheap to own, so you're paying very little in investment fees. And then at the other end is you find a couple of companies and you do a dividend reinvestment fund. You buy the stocks to buy the dividends. So those are the kind of ways that you can go about doing it. But every time you take another step up on that ladder of risk, it's risky. You know, you could lose some money. And we've seen over the last 5 years just how risky the stock market can be. The stock market's done nothing in all this time. So bonds have actually done a little better, but now the bond market is kind of in strange shape. So I don't know that there's anything that doesn't entail some risk other than basically CDs. And they pay virtually nothing.
Really? Would CDs be better? Because if, like at a credit union,
don't the like your savings account, can't you put something in a savings account that kind of earns something, or no?
Sure. Well, you can do the equivalent of a money market fund.
Uh-huh.
Right, and that money will be protected up to $250,000. But my money market fund, in my, I have a small regional bank that I invest my money in, or use for my business accounts, and I think that's paying like under 1%.
Okay.
I mean, if you look around the world, right, everybody, all the big central banks have, like our own Federal Reserve, have lowered the interest rate down to next to nothing in order to try and stimulate the economy. But it isn't stimulating your personal economy.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not really doing all that much for stimulating the international economy at the moment. But that's the thinking, that's the theory behind what they're trying to do. But what that does on a very practical level is anybody who has a fixed amount of money like you do, or you're living on a fixed income like so many seniors are, really puts a crimp on what's going on for them.
Okay, one more thing. Now, I have really no experience with investing or anything. Basically, everything you told me was another language. Is
uh-oh.
There, who can I speak to that could explain the things that I wrote everything down that you said, all the different, the CDs and the total stock market fund and the total bond, and I wrote everything down. Now, where can I go to find out exactly what those are?
Well, I will recommend a series of books written by a friend of mine. They're usually at Costco. Costco loves Dan. His name is Dan Solon. And he has a brand new book that's coming out, I want to say January 2nd. I just got an email release about it. And the book is called The Smartest Money Book, The Smartest Money Book You'll Ever Read, I think is what it's called. I'm looking for the email right now. It's such an interactive show. The Smartest Money Book, yes, it's called The Smartest Money Book You Will Ever Read. Dan has written a series of these books. He's an investment advisor. He's an attorney. He's a really smart guy. I've had him on my show on Sundays a number of times. He's written we hired him to write some blogs for the Equifax Finance blog, which is fantastic. But he's got a new book out, and it'll be published January 3rd. You can pre-order it now on Amazon, The Smartest Money Book. And what I like about Dan and his books is that they are written in a language that is just so easy for everybody to understand. And even though Dan is a money manager, investment money manager, right, he believes you can do most of this on your own, like I do.
Okay.
And that's what I love about it. His website is smartestinvestmentbook.com. Smartestinvestmentbook.com.
Okay.
And if you go to thinklink.com, my website, thinkglink.com, if you go to my website, Solon, Dan Solin, his interviews will pop up and all kinds of content will pop up. If you go to his website, you can see the names of all of his books. And I suggest you read his books. They're paperback, they're inexpensive, and they answer all of these questions. The smartest retirement book you'll ever read, the smartest portfolio you'll ever own. He believes you can do your portfolio with three index funds, which I agree with, the smartest 401k book, the smartest investment book you'll ever read, and now the smartest money book you'll ever read. So I recommend you get some of these books and read them, and then if you have more questions, Dan is everywhere. You can find him on AOL and on Huffington Post and on the Equifax Finance blog. But I think you'll really have a good understanding of what you need to do to become the smartest investor you can be. And I, you know, honestly, you want to take such good care of this money, I can tell.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't recommend anybody who I don't think so highly of.
Okay. Okay. And until then, just put it in savings.
Take that money, put it in a money market account, and just let it sit there, because the smartest thing you can do is not to make a fast move with your money. Put it in there. So you earn 0.5% for 3 months while you educate yourself?
Yeah.
Great. Over the long life of your long life, hopefully you're going to have one, that's going to be a very small amount of time and a very small amount of money. And this way, you're just going to have an opportunity to invest in your own knowledge. And I'm such a believer in that. Thanks so much for your call. It is 21 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. Online all the time. Think. Glink.com, THINKGLINK.com. Thanks so much for listening to us. Stocks are a little bit lower right now, down 124 points today. It's kind of an interesting week. We normally don't see a whole lot of trading up and down. And yet what we've seen this week and part of last week is we've the Christmas miracle, right? But usually that keeps building until the year end. But there is so much going on right now in Europe that it is really hard for people to predict where the market's going to wind up. So this morning I got up and I heard, oh, market's going to open higher because Italy had a good bond market and sold off some, you know, whatever. And yet the market's been down all day. And in fact, even though we had a 5% rally last week that helped the Wall Street post its best quarter in over a year, S&P 500 has already pulled back below its 200-day moving average. And is down, I believe. It's erased its gains for the year. And investors are going to, you know, just don't know where things are going. It's really hard to know. So we saw things like energy and materials do well over the last 5 days. And they went lower. People took some profits off the table. Everybody's seeing some, you know, major hurdles on the horizon. We're just going to have to go through it day by day and try and parse it out and figure out what it's going to mean to you. 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glake. We're going to come back to more of your questions next on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Blink, sitting in for Clark today and tomorrow. So glad you could join us here on News Talk WSB. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and you're having a great week between Christmas and New Year's. I just got back from a multi-generation trip with my mother and sisters and their families, and we ended up in Costa Rica for 10 days. Which I have to say, as nice as it is today here in the Atlanta area, it was really nice out in Costa Rica, much warmer and very sunny, and a lot of fun to get away. And these kind of multi-generational trips are really sort of interesting because in some ways it brings out, there's so much more to them. It almost seems as though you get this kind of exponential benefit because you're spending time with family on different levels. You know, it's not just me and my mom. It's me, my mom, and my sisters and their children. Then the children get to spend a lot of time together. My kids, Alex, who, of course, is already in high school, all the way down to my youngest niece, who's six, little Amelia, who literally is about a third of Alex's size. But watching the kids play together in the pool or walk on the beach and hold hands is very sweet. And it gives you a chance to really have these kinds of multi-generational experiences. And you don't have to go away to have it. You don't have to spend money, which I think is necessarily a nice thing. I mean, you can have this kind of an experience, you know, at your house over the holidays. And it's a nice way, I think, for everybody to have a chance to do that. For grandparents who are fortunate enough to have some extra cash on hand, These trips are a way for you to pass down wealth. Spend it now on experiences that will build sort of a really nice platform going forward, something that for people to remember and talk about. And it gives you a platform for creating the kind of legacy that you want to create. When my kids were born, they were the first kids in the family, grandkids in the family on our side. And my mother said, I want to be the movie grandma. And I said, well, what is the movie, Grandma? Do you want to star in movies about grandmas? What do you want to do? She said, no, I really want to be the, I want when they think of me to remember that we saw all the movies together. And so my mother, who, you know, has done some babysitting but never was really the babysitting grandma, as many people have, she became the movie grandma. So it's a passion for her, seeing the movies. She goes to movie groups, film club. And so she did that with my kids, and that became like one of her things to do. And I think having that kind of relationship where, you know, when kids are little, if you throw a lot of different things at them, maybe they don't take it all in. But when you have something that happens year in and year out over and over again, it is something that sticks in their mind. And so that's how it's been with my mom. These trips have been something that we've done with both sides of the family, these multi-generational trips. And I can see that they're changing the way my kids both see themselves and their role in the family. And it's really interesting to see how those changes have occurred and the implications for the future. So my little holiday wish for all of you is to get a little bit of that kind of multi-generational experience and do something positive with it. 404-872-0750. Rose from Norcross joins us on the line. Hi, Rose. Or maybe not. let's try that again. Ron, are you with us?
Hey,
Ron?
Ron.
Hi, Ron. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show. How can I help you today?
Hey, yes, ma'am. I wanted to ask you, for someone like myself that has never been late and not struggling necessarily to make the mortgage payment, but the value of our home is significantly down. We're looking at houses that are twice the size of my house in my same subdivision going for like $100,000 less.
Oh,
than what we owe on our home.
That's horrible. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and it's so depressing. I don't know what to do. And it seems like the short sale is the only thing we can do with some sort of dignity. But what would you advise if we're trying? Because we didn't have kids when we bought this house, but now we have two children, and we're just on top of each other. We just need to move, and it's not a lot of space left.
Right. Well, in a case like yours, you know, normally I would say, well, maybe if the other houses are worth significantly more than yours, you could add on to your house, and then it would increase the value. But in your case, where houses that are twice as big are worth $100,000 less, I think you might have to consider a short sale, if you can even give away the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, of course, is going to significantly damage your credit for the next 5 years.
Right.
3 to 5 years. And you're going to have to rebuild all the way back. So you don't have any good choices here, which it's just what's going to hurt you less, really, is where we are.
Right. Well, thank you so much. That's what I wanted to know.
Well, you got to come up with a plan and figure out what kind of hit you want to take, if you're going to take one. Is there any way you could rent out this house, let's say, and not do a short sale?
You know what, the houses are so cheap, the renting almost doesn't even make sense. To not even make a profit, I'm looking at probably $400 or $500 more than what somebody can pay for a house in a month.
Okay.
If they was buying it, you know, their mortgage payment would be. But I think we will still try to shop that and just see what kind of attention we get.
Never know. I would send a note around to your neighbors and see if any of them have anybody who wants to either rent or buy the house.
Right.
With a short sale, you're going to have to. Some lenders are better about this than others.
Right.
You can list it for sale. You can talk to your lender, ask what they would take for a short sale. You can list it for sale, but ultimately they may not want to take, you know, do a short sale, or they may not be work with you. In that case, you might have to simply do a little jingle mail.
Sure.
Which is where you just send it back to them.
Sure. May I ask you one other question?
Sure.
I remember you saying something that there was a program that will allow you to, I believe, refinance on what the value of the home is worth now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for basically homes that were serviced by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Is that correct?
Yes.
Our home, I'm almost certain we did a conventional loan. I don't think it's serviced by either of those. Are there any options for us?
Well, first of all, it would be hard to imagine if you did a conventional loan that didn't end up with Fannie and Freddie.
Okay.
So I think what you might want to do is go to makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And that is the government website. On that website, you can click in directly to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and you can put in your loan number, and it will tell you if either of them have your loan.
Okay.
If they do, then you may qualify for this new program the new and improved Home Affordable Refinance Program, HARP 2.0, as they call it. But for people who are severely underwater, and it sounds like you are severely underwater, that program hasn't really kicked into gear yet. It's only for people who are kind of slightly underwater.
Right, okay.
But that will kick into gear the first quarter of next year, but it's still worth going to makinghomeaffordable.gov and taking a look. But what's your interest rate right now?
I believe our last interest rate was somewhere around 4.75.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm not sure you're going to get much better than that, and it doesn't solve the problem of needing a bigger house.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But I think you should look into it anyway. If you guys can keep squeezing in for a little while longer, that's fine. But I got to tell you, I think it could be 20, 30 years for your home value to come back, if ever.
Right.
So I think for you, figuring out what you should do next is something you should plan for, if that means buying first and then this house goes into a short sale after.
Right.
Or you're going to rent for 4 or 5 years. I just, you know, you're going to be able to rent this house and only lose, let's say, $100 a month.
Right.
But you can get somebody in there who wants to rent it. You just want to think through all of your options.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate your time, and I thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Good luck, and Happy New Year. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's see if we can get Rose back on the phone. Rose, you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. Telephone technology doesn't always work that well. Tell me, what's on your mind today, Rose?
Well, the question I have is, I really have two questions if you have time. But the one question I have a few 404Bs that I have to begin taking the minimum distribution next year. And I've received conflicting information in investigating how I have to take the minimum distribution. Do I have to take the minimum distribution? Excuse me. Do I have to take the minimum distribution from each 403B, or can I add the total together of each of the 403Bs, figure the minimum distribution, and then take the amount from just one of them?
I believe, and I'm sorry you didn't call back last hour with our tax experts, but I believe that you can just take it from one.
Great.
I believe that is the case, but you know, I say that. I am not an enrolled agent or a CPA or a tax attorney. Right? But I do think that you can just take it from the one. But what I would love for you to do is on my website, if you just leave your question in a comment, I know that Bill and Mary, who were with us last hour, who are our tax experts, are going to take a look at those, and they'll try to give you a more complete answer.
Okay.
And in addition, you can always call, you can call them or contact them. We'll put up the email, or I think it's going to go up in today's show notes, their email address, and you can ask them directly.
Well, thank you. May I ask you one other quick question?
Sure.
Okay. In choosing an alarm company to monitor your home, is it better to go with a company that does its own monitoring, or is it just as good to go with a company that subcontracts the monitoring? I found that the companies that do their own monitoring charge a considerable higher rate than companies that subcontract the monitoring.
I use a company that is a big national company, and they've sort of, you know, general areas. They don't subcontract it out, but they basically they're such a big national operation, it's like they subcontract it out, and I think it's just fine. The key thing is, if something happens, how quickly do they call you back? What's the guarantee? How quickly, you know, if they can't reach you, do they then immediately call the police or call the fire department? You know, what is the level of monitoring? And I think you can certainly try out the less expensive option and see how pleased you are with it.
Okay.
But I personally want, like, there's a big jump up in price usually between kind of self-monitoring, so they put in an alarm system, but it only rings at the house. It doesn't actually call anybody for you. And then the next level is these kinds of subcontracting into big national centers. And then the more expensive, high-price option is these local companies that they claim to do the monitoring themselves. I think it's kind of better to have the bigger, more automated operation, and if that's a reasonable price, try it there, and if you're not happy, you can always change.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Rose. Happy New Year. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Patricia joins us on the line. Hi, Patricia.
I got on Alma.
Patricia?
Yes?
You are on the radio on WSB. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
How can I help you today?
I have a quick question. My sister-in-law passed away recently. And
oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. She had paid into a retirement fund for about 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And my mother-in-law is the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's in her 80s, we've pretty much told her to take a lump sum. Does she have to pay taxes on that?
she may have to pay taxes on that. You want her to take, she can withdraw the money over 5 years. Why don't you want her to do that?
Well, because she's 80-something years old.
Okay. Well, she could take it all at once, but she will have to pay taxes on it. And
so
it just depends on what
income,
her...
income, not an inheritance.
No, it is. It becomes part of her income. It just... Okay. So, yes, it's an inheritance, and it has to be rolled from the retirement fund into an inherited IRA.
Uh-huh.
That's the first step.
Okay.
And once it's in the inherited IRA, then your mother-in-law can withdraw it. But she will have to pay taxes on that money because that money went into the retirement fund. I'm assuming it's like a 401k, tax deductible, tax deferred.
Actually, we don't know yet. This just occurred, and we're still dealing with the people. She can draw a monthly check, or she can get a lump sum, and that's the only thing we know. We don't even know the amount.
Okay, but what I'm saying is it depends on what the retirement account was. If it's a qualified retirement account,
uh-huh.
Like an IRA,
uh-huh.
versus a Roth IRA. Now, I know it's not a Roth IRA because they haven't been around for 30 years.
Right.
So it had because that money was qualified and it was tax deductible, tax deferred. Now, when your mother-in-law takes it out, she'll have to pay tax on it. But it's at her income.
Okay.
So she probably doesn't earn very much.
No.
And I agree that she should take it as a lump sum.
Okay.
Well, because not for any other reason other than just take it, and then you guys can help her have control of it, and maybe she can do something nice with it.
And then she can put it in this inheritance IRA.
No, that happens first. So to get the money out, they'll have to move it from the retirement. Typically what happens is you move it from the retirement account, think of it as a 401k, you roll it into something called an inherited IRA.
Okay.
It's a trustee-to-trustee transfer.
Okay.
And then from there, you withdraw it, either in a lump sum, or she can take it out in payments, or it just depends how you want to do it. Is it a lot of money?
Well, we don't know. We're thinking it's probably going to be in the neighborhood of maybe $60,000.
That is a lot of money, but it's not an extreme amount of money where
no.
You'd want to take some other tax precautions. But even taking $60,000 in a lump sum may affect her taxes, and so you probably want to talk to a tax professional.
Okay.
That's probably the first thing I would do.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Patricia. And again, I'm so sorry for your loss. 51 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Welcome back to News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750. It's a delight to be here today, and I'll be back tomorrow as well to hang out with you a little bit before the end of the year. We've put up our tax law changes piece, first hour of the show today. Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody from the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, they were with us today to answer your tax questions. And Bill had sent me this list that he compiled of tax law changes since the start of the recession. And both he and Mary said that they have never, in all of their years, their many, many years of doing tax returns, they have never seen such a huge amount of tax legislation that has helped or tried to help out. And it just speaks to the real huge depths of the recession. Take a look online. We put it up, thinkglink.com. And then we also put up a link to Dan Solon's new book, The Smartest Money Book You'll Ever Read, Everything You Need to Know About Growing, Spending, and Enjoying Your Money, which is available for pre-order. We are still looking for the link for the Foreign Bank Account Reporting Form that Bill talked about. And if we can find it, we will put that up as well for you. So go to thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. While you're there, sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Be sure to take a look at this list of tax law changes. Hard to believe how many there are, starting all the way back in 2007 with the foreclosure of taxpayers' primary residence taxability of forgiven debt law, which was suspended. Basically, no phantom income for the IRS if you go and do a short sale or a foreclosure, and that extends all the way through the end of next year. 58 minutes past the hour on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year. I'll be back tomorrow at 1. Join me here on AM 750, now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB. Hannity is next.